if the two greatest commandments are love God and love others, our first other is our spouse.
Yep.
It's the person you're parenting with, doing bills with, having sex with, doing chores with. Like, this is your first opportunity to love others. And that, I think, is where, we all are extremely passionate about this. It's deceptive to be kind and patient and loving to your children, to your neighbors. But if you're not love, kind, and patient to your spouse, it's an interesting narrative. It's a confusing narrative. And it teaches children, wait, your love actually is conditional.
Hey, welcome back to the Marriage After God podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith. Before we get started on today's episode, I want to invite you, as usual, hit that like button. Make sure you subscribe so you don't never miss an episode. We're on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you like to listen or watch. Also, if you'd like to support this show, check out shop.marriageaftergod.com and pick up one of our marriage resources. In today's episode, I'm interviewing Casey and Megan Kasten. They are the founders and operators of Marriage 365. I'm sure you probably know them. They're very large on social media. In this conversation, we talk about how to make awesome habits in your marriage. These habits are powerful and for forming a stronger, loving marriage. We talk about the four-step process to asking for forgiveness, which is a huge one in our marriages. Sometimes we don't know how to ask for forgiveness, how to apologize well. And so I hope you enjoy this conversation with Casey and Megan Kasten. Enjoy. Casey and Megan, welcome to the Marriage After God podcast. I'm super happy to have you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've known you guys. I mean, not like we haven't been super close, but man, we've been definitely following you guys for years. We met you guys, man, we were just talking almost 14 plus years ago.
At least
it was just before you guys started Marriage 365 ministry. Yeah. And we had only been doing, you know, we were doing Unveiled Wife at the time, only a year. And now we're Marriage After God, but it's just so cool seeing where you guys have come. You guys have blown up. So, it's good because,
you know, Aaron, it's a long obedience in the same direction. Really.
It's a rule. It's a number one business rule.
Yeah. It's amazing to see the impact you guys are making too. So it's been really, really cool to watch you guys grow. And just, again, marriage is a hard space. You really have to be called to be in this space. It's not glitzy or glamour. We always say, you don't get into the marriage space to be rich or famous. Because it's, you know, marriages are under attack and it's a hard conversation for a lot of people to have. Honestly, there's a lot of shame around it. So, yeah.
Well, and most, especially in the Christian world, most Christians, we try and keep everything to ourselves. And I know you guys talk about that in your book that we're going to talk about later. But it's important that we have these discussions and we talk about marriage and we fight for it. And so that's what you guys have been doing for the last 14, 15 years, is what we've been doing. And it's so great to have you guys. I'm sure my audience knows you guys because everyone knows you guys. Why don't you just start with sharing who you are, what you guys do, how long you guys have been married, how many kids, just all the biographical awesomeness.
Yeah, the basics. Yeah.
Yep.
So we are college sweethearts. We met at in 2001. And, you know, dating was really easy and fun and exciting. And we thought, let's just do this forever. Like, why would marriage be hard? And then we got married. And honestly, within the first day of being married, we quickly started to see things in a different light. Like, wow, did I marry the wrong person? Is this what marriage is supposed to be like? I thought if it was true love, it shouldn't be this hard. Like, we had a lot of myths, a lot of fantasies going on in that head, but both of ours.
Yeah.
And within 3 years of our marriage, we were heading towards divorce. And I don't think that we were ever thinking that would happen to us. I mean, I don't think anyone gets married thinking, well, you know, I give it a good couple of years and we'll get divorced. But an interesting statistic is that, you know, between both sets of our parents, there's 12 marriages.
Yeah.
So we were raised in the broken home, blended family, both raised in the church.
It was normal for you guys. Yeah.
It was normal, but we were like, we can't be like our parents. We have to be different. And it ended up being that we were acting exactly like our parents, actually, because we did not have the skills and the tool sets. But I think more than that, like, we're both very stubborn.
And very competitive.
Yes. We both came from a lot of baggage that we had never really processed and healed from. And, you know, we did things, stupid things. Like, we got ourselves into a bunch of debt. And, you know, we we were right fighters. Like both of us, when we went into an argument, it was like, we are going to be, I'm going to be right. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care if I'm wrong and I'm not going to tell Casey, but like, I'm going to be right. And so after a while, if there's no repair, there's no love, there's no connection, it gets pretty horrible. And so all that to say.
Well, and can I want to add a little bit of a flavor to that is the fact that we were navigating the church. And at the time, I just remember all the platitudes were thrown at us. You guys just need to put Jesus at the center of your marriage. Like, okay, what's that mean?
Yeah.
You need to pray about it. You need to pray for your marriage. So I said, Jesus, would you change my wife's heart?
Yep.
Would you change her heart?
I'm in prayer, yeah.
That would make everything all better.
Oh, that's so funny. I prayed that Jesus would change your heart.
Yeah, see, there you go. See, I'm right.
Yeah.
So you're wrong. Yes. So even interpreted in my prayer.
We weren't willing to take the planks out of our own eyes, right? No. And so I'll let you say, long story short, you know, I told my best friend, like, we're going to divorce. This is horrible. And she said, I think you need to go talk to somebody about that. So I went to an amazing therapist and she gave me the best advice. She said, if you want to make a better marriage, it starts by making a better you, mm-hmm. which now has become our tagline for Marriage 365. And it's not a sexy message. It's not exciting, but
kind of sucks, actually.
It works.
It sucks because you have to deal with your own stuff. Sorry.
And so for 13 months, I learned how to communicate. I learned how to apologize. I learned how to create boundaries all on my own without Casey because he was unwilling to get help for the marriage. And in that time, God did miracles. God softened my heart for the first time towards Casey. I was able to forgive him and he wasn't even asking for forgiveness. I was able to take the blinders off and see how I was really showing up, that, oh, I was actually half of the problem. He was half of it, but I was the other half of it. And in 13 months, he noticed a huge change. I mean, I did, Aaron, an entire 180. I became a different person in a good way. I needed to. You know, it was like the cleanse, the purging. And then I say, you know, it took us 2 years to fall in love, took us 3 years to destroy our marriage, but it took 4 to 5 years to rebuild our marriage. And so it didn't happen overnight.
And in the rebuilding of the marriage, we couldn't afford therapy. We did a couple sessions, but we couldn't really afford it. And the church, this is a little pain point. The church didn't have anything in terms of educating us. It was kind of like once you were in trouble, mm-hmm. then you go see the pastor, but there was no like encouragement. I never heard any Bible mm-hmm. studies about marriage. I never heard any programs that were like, hey, this is going to be ongoing, helpful yeah. for, you know, building a strong family.
I don't even think there were that many books at that time. Like Focus on the Family was probably yeah. only one. And that was way before they had all their online stuff together. You know,
there's no social media. It was yeah. pre all of us, all of us.
Yes, yes.
There's a handful of them, but not many. Marriage yes. Ministries online.
Exactly. No social media yet, right? Didn't really exist. So
this is a little bit of a rabbit trail, but for me, you know, having a strong marriage, building a great family where the kids, you're almost jealous of that couple and the family and the yep. kids and everything like is probably one of the greatest gospel presentations we could give to a watching world.
It's exactly what Marriage After God's about. It's
exactly, yeah. Exactly. I mean, exactly. That's why we totally love what you guys are doing because I'd almost say it's actively being deprioritized in churches because there's no budget allocation, there's no yeah. resources, there's no programs. And while there's hurting marriages that are out there suffering in silence, most of them, we as a church are not equipping the saints to have thriving marriages where people would look at two people going, man, they came from a horrible background. They're more different than alike. And yet they are having the time of their lives. They're mm-hmm. laughing. Like that kind of love is just mm-hmm. so rare.
Well, especially these days, I want to vent with you for a second. You're going on a rabbit trail that I'm passionate about. You're exactly right. Just, I don't want to tear down churches. I'm sure there are churches out there that have, you know, thriving marriage ministries, and they do put an emphasis on it, but they're very rare. I did my own research on it. It's like 98% of churches they have almost no marriage focus at all. And so most churches, everything's segmented. You know, you have your women's ministry, you have your men's ministry, you have mom's ministry over here, you have children over here. Everyone's separate. Everyone's doing their own thing, which is not inherently wrong, but there's no regular weekly focus of the in-between. There may be a premarital counseling. There may be a marriage in crisis which a lot of churches don't have a marriage in crisis, you know, help. But there's nothing in the rest of marriage. There's no weekly support. There's no regular Bible study you can go to with your spouse to just learn from the Word of God, be around other marriages, be encouraged, be in community, be in fellowship as a couple, you know, focusing on that healthy thing like you're just talking about. And it's crazy.
It's like, sad. It's very sad. And it's a problem. And we should be, anyone listening to this, you should be worried. You should be concerned. And you should be praying for your church and talking to your leaders. I encourage people to do that all the time. Go to your pastor, let them know, hey,
we want this.
Do a marriage event. Yeah, we should. But here's the thing. If the two greatest commandments are love God and love others, our first other is our spouse.
Yep.
It's the person you're parenting with, doing bills with, having sex with, doing chores with. Like, this is your first opportunity to love others. And that, I think, is where, we all are extremely passionate about this. Because it's deceptive to be kind and patient and loving to your children, to your neighbors. But if you're not love, kind, and patient to your spouse, it's an interesting narrative. It's a confusing narrative, and it teaches children, wait, your love actually is conditional. You show
it's hypocrisy.
It is. It absolutely is. So to wrap it up, our story, we repaired our marriage. We kind of started creating our own tools and resources, started in the church, really excited. And then we just told God was very clear. We want you out of the church. It was scary. We were very fearful.
But
we've been doing this for almost 14 years. We do have two children. Our daughter is 17, so we almost have an adult, and our son is 14, and we have a really cute dog. And we've been married 22 years.
22 years. Hey, Aaron, I just want to fan the flame of the prophetic voice that you have into the body of Christ regarding the lack of marriage resources, and just to say, like, you know, prophets did not bring a message of comfort. They brought a little fire. Like, hey, guys, capital C church, I'm kind of pissed off right now. You are not honoring marriages by, like, your lack of support. It's not a sin of commission. It's a sin of omission.
Mm.
We're not equipping people to have thriving families. And now people are trying to get tools and resources. And who are they turning to? They're not turning to the church. And that's a big miss for us.
Yeah. So I agree. And I think churches need, it's something that I actually want to start developing, is to help churches develop a regular, focused, weekly program for marriages. And so that it's all the in between. It's the days in between it's helping between the beginning and the end. And it's like that this is what keeps it from having an end, is you having this weekly, regular focus on who you are as a couple. With other couples, and I know you talk about this in your book, is not doing it alone, which is what we all do. We all do this alone. I want to ask something real quick, just a clarification. You said God wanted you out of the church. I just want you to clarify that. You're talking about in the way you communicate this message of marriage, that you're not just focusing on within the church. You're focusing on everyone that's pre-church.
I mean, we obviously reach a lot of believers too. I mean, yes. I think there's a lot of believers that follow us that are like, we know that we love that you're, so we're very missional. So we were actually on staff part-time at a church, and it was wonderful. But again, we continued to hear God push us. We were very stubborn about it. We ignored it for almost a year until Casey got into a car accident on Christmas Eve. And God's like, okay, are you done fighting me on this? And then a week later we started Marriage 365. So we knew that when you look at Jesus's ministry, even though it was only 3 years long, which is crazy, by the way, to think about, because he could have lived to be like 90 and had way more years, but that was the plan, right? You know, he really hung out with people who were of all different kinds of backgrounds and struggles. And I think
he came to the sick, not the healthy.
Yeah. You know? And I think when you're hurting in your marriage, you are sick. You are blind. You feel poor. You feel robbed of things. Like, you feel orphaned even. You feel abandoned. And so, So to clarify, we do. We will work with Christians. But we also love to help people who are not. Mm. We also work with a lot of people who have left the church. And they're frustrated and they're angry and they feel that hypocrisy. My parents made me go to church growing up. Mm-hmm. And they got divorced, and what is this whole thing about? And so it's again, it's not our job to save people. We plant seeds. We feel like the light is with us and our resources, and we just let God do the work.
Yeah, I was just clarifying that because I didn't want people to think that you're saying you left the church.
We go to a church and we love our church, and they're a wonderful
your focus
church.
Has been outside of just to the church. That's right.
We say faith neutral.
I knew what you meant by it. Yeah.
Faith neutral.
So you guys wrote this book, and it's about habits. And I love this. There's a handful of really popular books on habits. Mm-hmm. And you guys took the concept, I'm guessing. Yeah. And said, hey, marriages need habits too. And so I'd love to just, what brought you to this point of writing a book about habits for your marriage? And then let's get into talking about some of the stuff in it, because I think it's really powerful. It's things that all of us probably on some level are like, yeah, that's great. I know I should do that, but don't put anything to practice. It becomes really hard. We're like, how do we find these, you know, rhythms and routines? So what brought you to coming up with this book?
Yeah. So one of my favorite groups of people to talk to are entrepreneurs, business owners.
Me too.
And I'm in a community with them as part of EO. And, you know, they understand that when they got into business, they created an intentional structure to manage their people, cash, strategy, and execution. All businesses deal with those four pillars. Mm-hmm. And there's tools that are around them, like how often are we going to meet as a company? What kind of culture are we creating? How are we tracking cash, right? What's our KPIs, our SOPs? And all of these tools and systems have created success to contain, you know, a growing, thriving business. And what a lot of those guys do is they're very intentional in this one domain of their life. And then when they fling open the door at home, it's just like pure chaos.
They're winging it.
There's just hope as a strategy. We don't have a plan in place. We don't have these like rhythms. And so what happens is if we're just winging it, we think that love is all we need. We can unintendedly install bad habits into our relationship. Yeah. So the marriage so we call all those tools for businesses, we call those a business operating system. Now, this is going to sound really not sexy. I get it. But the marriage habit is a marriage operating system. It's a handbook on how to practically and tactically apply these healthy habits, these systems, these rhythms as a structure that then houses all that connection and safety and romance. And so for a lot of people, they just need this like practicality. Like, what does this look like on a Monday morning? Or how do we do a weekly marriage business meeting? And we're really excited about this book because I haven't seen anything else out there. There's a lot of books about concepts, but this is very, very tactical. Like you can read this and like, okay, I know exactly what I need to do next.
There's a lot of type A's and firstborn personalities that are thinking like yes, this is it.
I like it.
I need this. So what are some of these, like, what are these, some of these habits that you guys have found in your own marriage, and how do we work these into our marriages?
Yeah. So one of the most popular habits is called the weekly marriage business meeting. And really it's this idea that once a week on Sundays, or maybe for other couples it's Saturdays, you're looking at the week ahead and you're sitting down and you're talking about all the transactional and logistics of your marriage. So like schedules, who's going where with who, meal planning, who's cooking. Hey, Wednesday night, we're all busy. Should we just pick up Chick-fil-A? You know, budgets. Is there any big expenses coming up that we need to talk about, that we need to prepare for? Alone time, self-care time. How is Casey going to, you know, make sure he invests in himself so that he is not pouring from an empty cup? And things like connection time. When do Casey and Megan just get to be Casey and Megan, not Casey and Megan of Marriage 365? When are we going to go on a walk or go on date night or, you know, really any kind of connection time? But a lot of couples, again, wing it. And so we're advocates for scheduling it. Then you don't have to ever worry about feeling neglected or disconnected.
Yeah.
And then another item on that weekly marriage business meeting is actually sexy time.
Woohoo!
We are huge advocates for scheduling sex. We always have been. And here's why. You want to hear a crazy statistic, Aaron? Are you ready for this?
Go for it.
So we always tell people, you don't need to schedule sex if you and your spouse are content with both the quality and quantity. There's no need to schedule it. Like, it's working for you. It's serving you. Go for it. you want to take a stab or a guess at how many couples, though, are not satisfied with the quality and quantity?
It's like 98%.
You're close. It's 90%. 90% of couples are not aligned in this area. They're winging it. And then they're like, oh, we don't have sex. We don't have sex enough. Or it feels rushed, or I'm too tired. This is why we schedule it. And we know that if we don't schedule it, the chances of Casey and I having sex, we're so busy, we have two teenagers, it's probably not going to happen. So yeah. And then it's just a way to look forward and align your calendars. And men can really wrap their mind around this, because it's not necessarily about feelings and emotions. It's just, let's make sure that we deal with the logistics so that when we have Wednesday night, which is our connection time, we're not having to talk about schedules. We're not having to talk about that utility bill that wasn't paid. You know, we get to actually just be a couple.
And let me jump on a word that you just said, and that is alignment. You know, when you think about conflict in relationships, it is oftentimes, it's the day-to-day stuff that we're moving in and out. We had an expectation that wasn't met. It creates conflict and tension. But when you have alignment, oh, I mean, for most of the couples we work with, when this is like a non-negotiable habit, by the way, that we should go immediately, you got to do this. They talk about conflict being reduced by over 50%. Mm-hmm. Conflict just goes down. It goes away
having this weekly
marriage business meeting. And you know, there's a couple questions on there, like, what can I do to help you out this week? You know, that communicates we're a team. We're in this together. You know, there's another question on the weekly marriage business meeting that says, you know, what are any stresses, fears, or concerns you have? It doesn't even have to be about your marriage. It could be about, hey, babe, I've got a really big work meeting on Thursday. Could we pray about it? Like, it's causing me some anxiety and some stress.
Yeah.
It could be, hey, it's the holidays and I have to see my mom and I haven't seen her in a long time. And the last time we talked, it was awkward. So it's really an opportunity for couples to just have alignment. Tactical purpose of it is, number one, yes, alignment. But I think two, it takes only about 30 minutes to an hour. If you've got a lot of kids and a lot of moving parts, it's probably more like an hour. But for people who maybe don't have as much going on, 30 minutes to 45 minutes a week. I mean, you can make that time. And again, every business owner would say, well, absolutely. Or anyone who works for any company, you want to know what's expected. You want to know what's coming up. It really brings more confidence to the relationship.
I'm convicted on this business-wise. So I need to do that more in my business. But I'm also convicted on it personally, because it's something that I, you know, I have on my calendar that I'm supposed to do a checkup with my wife on Sundays. And it's something that we miss, and it's something that we're not habitual in. So what are some of the steps to help something like this become a habit? So, like, yes, I'm sure everyone listening is like, that sounds great. Love that. But we got social media. We got, you know, our bedtimes aren't very consistent with the kids sometimes, that we've got, we're extra tired sometimes. There's these things that get in the way. What are some little tips to help the habit begin to form?
Yes. So number one is you have to put it in your calendar as a reoccurring event with an alarm.
Checking my calendar right now.
Right now. And you just decide. And the best thing to do, Aaron, is actually to keep it consistent if you can on the time. So if it's like for us when the kids were younger, it was always Sunday night at 9 o'clock after they were already asleep.
Yeah.
But now that they're older, you know, they're teenagers. I mean, we got one that drives. We can be like, kids, go away. We're doing our weekly marriage business meeting. You know,
business hours right now.
But here's the thing. This is also, I think it's actually really good to do in front of your kids, because it's teaching them that part of marriage is this practical side of it, that it's not just the Hollywood Disney love romance. Like, that's a great part of it too. But so much more of marriage is the tactical, the day-to-day operations. And so, yeah, put it in your calendar, set it as a reminder. I like to say someone should own it. Initiating it. And I'm going to tell
you that type A.
Well, I was going to say,
that's good.
If the husband own it. Is trying to rebuild trust with his wife, he should initiate it. It's every wife I've ever coached will say, that turns me on. Like, when my husband says to me, hey, babe, we need to sit down and let's do our weekly marriage business meeting. She's like, oh, I'll drop everything for you.
One, for a lot of the men that are desiring to lead better and not knowing where to start with that, this is a part of that, is like, I'm going to step into this leadership role here. I'm going to make this time, make sure it doesn't get interrupted, make sure that we're ready to go.
Yes.
So that's really good. We're looking for people who have been blessed by this free podcast and our free daily marriage prayer emails and who want to help be a blessing to others. Creating and hosting this podcast and sending out our daily emails do incur a financial cost. And we want to invite you to join our faithful patron team to help financially support these resources so that they can remain free for all who need them. Please join our patron team today and become one of the faithful financial supporters who desires to help bless thousands of marriages around the world. Your support will help us pay for the creation, hosting, and promotion of our podcast and daily emails. Thank you, and we hope to see you become a Marriage After God patron.
Yeah, another little helpful tip is when you get the book, The Marriage Habit, the worksheet's actually printed in the book, but there also is a link that we give.
I was going to say that you
can print out and download. And I think the visual reminder, having it in your bedroom or in your office or wherever, is really helpful for most people. It's that visual reminder. Oh, that's right. This is important. But here's the cool thing about it. Once you start implementing it and make it a habit, it does become this thing where, like, we know that we fight if we don't do it. So at this point, we just do it because I don't want the fight. I don't want the argument.
Mm. And I do want to say, you know, when you're trying to start a new habit, like think about diet, exercise, quit smoking, quit drinking, whatever that may be. You know, when you first do that habit, it feels really uncomfortable. It feels really awkward. But as you continue to do that, it just becomes second nature where I know on Sunday nights, Megan and I are going to sit on the couch. Mm-hmm. We're going to be pulling out the iPad, looking at the calendar. Our calendar looks like a rainbow just threw up all over it because different assignments. So there's like the water polo schedule. There's the kids' schedule. There's Megan and I time. There's my time. There's Megan's time. So there's all these different designations in the calendar. The cool thing for me, because I'm more the type B.
ADHD, type B.
I'm a little scattered.
Yes.
That's me.
Yeah. That is really me. So what's really cool is rather than bugging Megan, it's Wednesday morning when we're filming this, what's going on today? I don't have to ask her that or, if she's in the middle of something, I can just pull out the calendar and go, this is the stuff that we agreed on. Now, I want to say that certainly there's room for
flexibility
and, oh my gosh, like we blew out a tire. So like a lot of things change.
Yeah, but things happen. Yeah.
Things happen. Our daughter just went to the ER for a bee sting, which is a whole other story.
Right before we had Friendsgiving.
Right before we had Friendsgiving over. Yeah. So, your whole schedule is like, okay, that's different. Yeah. But that's why you also want to make sure that one of the checkboxes on the worksheet is self-care time. Because when things like that happen, if you're running from thing to thing to thing to thing, or you're overcommitted, everything will feel like a nuclear bomb. And that's not good. And we cannot be reactionary. And that's where most couples that we work with are very reactionary. And what we're telling you with these habits is be proactive. Do not be reactionary. Reactionary is very difficult to regulate emotions in the moment when things happen. And we know things are going to happen. The enemy is attacking us at all ways, places, times, because he wants to take you and your spouse down.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to have buffer space, like buffering in space to have self-care time and connection time so that you two are good. Then when those explosions happen, you'll be able to handle it.
That's good. So I'm just thinking about the ADD side of me. Like you. So it's great having the calendar. And like this last 2 years has been the first time I've ever really leaned into having a calendar and like putting stuff on the calendar. And I would say I'm like 28% better at it. Hey, so that's something I'm trying to
get. Better than zero.
So it's something that I'm trying to be much more consistent with.
Yes.
But there's also the just internal problems of me still wanting to be extra spontaneous and not even sticking to my calendar at times. So there's like this, is there anything you talk about in your book when it comes to, cause you're talking about self-care and you're talking about sitting down and having this habit. But on the personal side of things, you talked about this in the beginning, Megan, starting with a better you. And this is something that we always encourage couples is like reconciliation and marriages getting stronger sometimes has to start with one person. It's rarely ever both.
Rarely. And so
how are we as husbands, how are we, wives to take a step back and look at you know, what are the habits that I currently have that I, and how to break those? Because I mean, with cell phones, social media, screen time, just all the distractions of life. I mentioned cell phone and screen time because that's the main one now.
Yeah.
How do we move past some of those things in us? I just found out, I'm just going to take a sidestep for a second. I looked at my Google Analytics for like the first time ever in like years. The number one blog post that I wrote years ago that's blowing up right now for the last several years. Last month I had 75,000 views. I didn't even know. I have no idea. And it's on 27 verses for men who struggle with self, with self-discipline, and they're looking for, you know, answers for this very thing, something that I've struggled with my whole life, just like personal disciplines. Mm-hmm. What are some steps for someone like me, someone like Casey, to take to help us in this area so that these tools that you're providing are actually useful?
Yeah. It's funny. Have you ever heard of Strength Finders?
Yes. I just took it yesterday. Yeah.
So discipline is one of my top five. So talk about, I'm not proud of it. No, it's like the opposite of Casey.
Well, and consistency is on the bottom of my list.
Yeah. I'm ranger discipline.
Discipline's not on my list at all.
Yeah, totally. Yes.
Look at it right now.
So as someone who definitely naturally has more discipline, like for example, I don't watch new shows because I know that I will want to binge and not go to bed. So I just watch the same shows over and over again. Like that's how disciplined I am. Like I will not, he'll tell you. Yep. So here's my best advice is start with the question of what is my spouse's biggest complaint about me? Like, what does my spouse complain about me? What comments have I heard? Do they say that I'm critical? Do they say that I'm inconsistent? Do they say that I'm an avoider? And to really be honest with yourself. And if you don't know the answer to that, go to your spouse and say, hey, I know this is a bold question, but I would actually love to hear. I know, I get it. I hear.
It's so opposite of what I'm like a words of affirmation guy. And it's like,
I know. But
can
here's
you give
the thing.
Me the opposite right now, please.
I know. But here's the problem is that if we don't know the areas, we're never going to grow. That's the hardest part. And so it's almost like, I mean, you could probably take a guess. You don't have to ask your spouse. You could say, yeah, I know. Most people have enough awareness to say, I'm probably critical or I'm probably inconsistent again. And my thing is one thing at a time. We talk a lot about baby steps in the book.
What's
just
the next right step?
One thing I can do. Mm-hmm. It's progress mm-hmm. over perfection. But you have to have a habit, a tool, a system. You could put post-its all over your house with reminders. You can have someone hold you accountable. Maybe you need one-on-one coaching or a mentor to come into your life mm-hmm. and check in on you. That's the beauty of all the things that we all do in marriage ministry is there's always a solution and a solve. Mm-hmm. But you're going to have to go find it and figure out which works for you. And so I tell a lot of people I coach, rarely do I meet someone that's like, I don't want to change. I don't want to grow. No, most people want to change. They want to grow. They don't know how, and they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And that's what we hope that this book provides is a stepping stone to saying, hey, maybe you could just incorporate one habit. Don't worry on all 10. Just pick one and see how it goes.
And then once you do know what your spouse's complaint is, the next habit that I actually was wanting to steer our conversation towards is an unsolicited apology.
Oh, I'm so glad you picked that one.
Yes.
Yeah, I liked that one.
Yeah.
It probably is the most underrated, mm-hmm. but yet the most powerful thing we can do in relationships. And sadly, I have been in church for 40 plus years and I have never heard a pastor explain how to apologize to someone, or even I can't even remember someone they were saying, like, it's important for us to apologize. I mean, even Jesus said, if you come and you've got an issue with your brother, I'm clogging my ears, leave the gift at the altar, go make amends, because he was that serious about reconciliation mm-hmm. with our fellow man. And yet we don't equip the saints on how to do this. So when I think of the way people have tried to repair their relationship after it's been broken, like a broken promise or over promise and under delivered.
Cutting word, or you're on your phone during dinner time.
Yeah.
You know, small things, big things.
Anything? Small things, big things, but things we do, things we don't do, mm-hmm. right? Things that that are not being said. We avoiding, you know, issues in the relationship. You can't just, you know, buy her flowers and think it's going to go away. I mean, that's, I hear a lot of guys saying, you know, I'm in the doghouse. I better go, you know, take her on a date night or something like that.
And that's great. We love date nights. We love flowers. No, but that's not true repair.
It's not reconciliation. It's not humility.
Yeah. So in the book, we actually give a framework for what we call four-step apology. And in that apology, it is acknowledging what you do. It's validating. This is so key. It's validating how you hurt your partner. It is admitting, hey, taking ownership. This is on me. It's asking for, how do I rebuild trust? So then it's an ongoing conversation. And finally, it invites forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the past 15 years, this is the tool that we use for couples in crisis. And we have watched, no joke, decades of anger, bitterness, resentment disappear when these couples actually apply this level of an apology. Mm-hmm. It is so powerful, and it brings me to tears to see that kind of, like, we call it the dark passenger. Like, if you're in a burdened marriage, there's this dark passenger that's telling you lies. It's the pain speaking to you in the present. And to watch that passenger evaporate and disappear, and to see the smiles, the joy, even in the face, they're flush with color. It's amazing. It's absolutely stunning.
And part of the whole unsolicited apology is not being asked for an apology. Like, so this was a turning point for Casey and I in that 13-month period where I was getting help for myself. So my therapist said, "What's the biggest complaint that Casey has about you?" And I said, "Oh, he tells me I'm controlling." And she said, "Okay, so what I want you to do is I want you to go home, and out of nowhere, I just want you to say, you know what? You've been saying that I'm controlling, and you're right. I have been controlling. And I am so sorry for being controlling, making you feel not just controlled, but disrespected and less than. And I was wrong." And I walked through she walked me through the four steps. She's the one that taught it to me. And your face, I'll never forget.
I did not know how to respond. It was so shocking and jarring when she said that to me. It was, all my defenses just lowered. Yep. It was like, wow, you're taking ownership of this? I got to imagine it was really hard for you to say that.
It was, but I had recognized that I was controlling and I needed to fix it. And if I want my husband to apologize, I should apologize. If I want my husband to
do unto others as you'd like them to do to you, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Heard that before.
I know. And it's, I was like, horrible. Oh, shoot. And so, and this, what's beautiful, Aaron, about a lot of these habits is that they're actually things that you can teach your children. Ugh. Because our kids know what a four-step apology is. And when brother hit sister when they were little, or even now because they still wrestle, they're both in water polo. So they're both very aggressive children.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't accept, "I'm sorry." You know, we've done that, but "I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Tell your brother sorry. I'm sorry.
"I'm
sorry, but he hit me first." There's no heart change. And that's where we were stuck in marriage, is we were saying sorry, but there was no motive to change, no heart posture, no humility, like you had said earlier.
Yep.
And I think that this habit out of the 10 is going to really be very healing for a lot of people. I'm very excited about that personally.
Well, what I love about it is you've given some logical steps to what the Bible calls repentance. It's a changing of the mind. It's a turning of the heart toward someone. And that it's exactly right. It doesn't require, I had a pastor once say, "Casey, it's like the opposite of what you're just saying." But this one, he said, the one that's the most mature in the relationship is the one that apologizes first. the one that comes first. And it's when you have an argument, you're like, I always think of that. Like, am I going to be the mature one right now and apologize? And I'm like, I'm not ready yet.
Yeah.
But,
because you're in an argument, you're both in pain. Someone has to go
elevation
first.
And yeah.
Yes. But if you want to make a better marriage, it starts by making a better you.
You got to do it.
And that's hard. That's why I said that message kind of sucks. Cause you got to,
it's not fun.
But it is also empowering. Cause I think a lot of, like, to what you had said, Aaron, there's a lot of people feeling stuck in their marriage because their partner mm-hmm. won't participate. And actually, there's a lot of things you can do to work on your marriage by yourself.
Well, I always tell people there is only one person you can work on. You can't do anything. Here's the deal. Anytime we ever try and work on someone else, that's not how life works. That's not how relationships work. I'm not trying to fix my wife. That's the Holy Spirit's job. That's God's job in her life. That's her relationship with God to do that. I could participate in it. I could be a helper in that, but it's not my job to do it. But I absolutely have full agency over myself. Yes. I I'm the only person, and I always tell people, you're the common denominator in all your problems. Like I'm the common denominator. Yeah. So I for sure have my stuff that I have to work on, and reconciliation takes two people, but forgiveness takes one, and walking out doing the right thing takes one. And, you know, the word of God, when you get into it and you look at, and you guys always are referencing Proverbs and you guys are taking from the scriptures to teach these principles, which is really good. It's not saying, hey, here's what you should tell someone else to do. It's saying, here's what you do. Like it's a message to the believer on how to walk out this life. And everything you're saying is so true. I just love that, that four-step process to asking for forgiveness. It's not just, I'm sorry. We tell our kids the same thing. They'll say, sorry. I'm like, hey, why are you sorry? Why don't you go look at them in the eyes, actually? Because often they just look at the wall. And I'm like, no, stop and go look at them.
Totally. And let me just give like a little side tidbit for anybody who's spent a lot of money in therapy, because therapists, unfortunately, don't often teach this, is when we apologize, step one is I'm sorry for the action. Okay. And then you insert a feeling of how it made you feel.
How it made your partner feel.
How it made your partner feel. Yes. So what people typically miss is they just focus on, I'm sorry I was on my phone. I'm sorry I haven't initiated sex. I'm sorry that I cut you off. I'm sorry that I forgot our anniversary. But the actual healing part is when you address how it made your partner feel mm-hmm. and then you validate that. Because that's what the real apology is. And if you do a deep dive into therapy or getting help for anything, that is where true healing and transformation happens. It's not just, I'm sorry for doing this. And again, you want that. That's part of it. But the most important part is, and it made you feel disrespected, or it made you feel alone. And I don't want you to feel alone. I don't want you to feel disrespected. That is like the validation that the pain is looking for.
And I'll just add another little, our coaching tips when we're coaching people. I'd actually say, Aaron, a majority of our coaching hours are spent facilitating apologies and those kinds of sessions
and
where people
how to forgive.
Yeah. But you know, the to your point, Megan, a lot of times we don't apologize because we didn't think we did something wrong, and that obviously is just a very selfish move of the relationship. It's like, well, this was my intent. It doesn't matter what you feel.
I didn't mean to.
And you know, people talk about gaslighting or, you know, this blame shifting. The most important part is, what was the impact of your actions? Mm-hmm. Even if you had the best intentions, but it didn't land well, you owe your partner an apology.
Mm-hmm. I got a question on that. And this you're describing issues that my wife and I have had. Like, this is just normal. That is a struggle for me at times when this is a reality also, is maybe I didn't do anything wrong, or maybe my wife didn't do anything wrong, but we received something a wrong way. How do you navigate that? Because there is something to be said about feeling like you have to apologize for something that you didn't do wrong. So how do you go to your spouse and still want to validate their feelings, but not at the cost of, I don't know how to say it.
I know exactly, you know what you're saying. Let me say it.
Yeah.
So I like to be on time for church. In fact, I like to be early for church, and I married someone with ADHD. Okay. Well, I married someone who, well,
time's more fungible.
Yeah. Who's late. So what I would do is I started getting really annoyed with this. So I would like be like, babe, we're leaving in 30. Babe, we're leaving in 20. he'd get all flustered. Then when we had kids, I started getting the kids involved, like, go tell dad, we're leaving. I'd get in the car, I'd be honking, like, not good, right? So we'd be driving to church. Of course, we're fighting in the car because I'm mad that we're going to be late and miss worship. He's like, we're fine. And then, of course, at church, we're not really receiving anything because I'm so fuming with anger, right? So one day about 11 years ago, Casey came to me really calmly and he said, hey, I just want you to know that when you make comments and you honk and then you get the kids involved, like, I really get overwhelmed and flustered and it makes me feel very disrespected. And then if anything, it actually makes me later because I'm like, I'm all stressed out about it. And I feel like we need to find a better solution and it really hurts. So here's my question for you. Am I wrong for wanting to be on time for church? No. Am I wrong for making Casey feel disrespected, flustered, and overwhelmed? There you go. So my intent is to get him on time for church. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, with my actions, I have caused him pain. Mm. And if I care about my husband and I want a happy marriage, I need to recognize that that's not okay and that I should apologize for that. So when we're saying we're wrong and we're validating, we don't are necessarily apologizing for the action in of itself. Because again, I'm never going to apologize for wanting to be on time for church. Ever, because I don't believe that that's wrong. But how I've approached it is what and how he's feeling. So when you're apologizing, and we walk you through this on The Habit in the book, you're focusing more on the feeling of how it made your spouse feel and less about the action. Again, because like you said, Aaron, there's things I feel like I didn't do anything wrong. And you maybe didn't do anything wrong. For whatever reason, your wife, it hurt her. And so if you want to make it better, just own it. Mm. Now, we most of the time drive separately to church, by the way. That was the solution.
Not most of the time. Oh, okay.
We have our friends even make comments about it, but okay.
Now we're digging into the truth of the matter.
Yeah. There's always a solution to a marriage problem. And sometimes it's driving separate.
Yeah. Could work. I mean, if you want to be on time, you know. Well, that's really good. I just, I want to give you just a moment. So we talked about two of the habits, which I thought were really good. By the way, I had an idea for you. I don't know, you probably already have this, but it sounds like you have like a worksheet for the weekly checkup, the business meeting, your business meeting. It'd be cool if you guys did like a ring bound, like, you know, 52 week one. And so you can kind of keep track of it and have it next to the bed and go back to like, oh, remember what we talked about?
We've had a couple couples show up to our retreats and they'll have a binder.
Yeah, printed out. Or
make one for them.
They have it laminated and they use a dry erase marker.
Dry erase marker. You're right, but it's a good idea. And we also, in our Marriage 365 app, we have over 75 worksheets that are very, like, we have one that's just soft startup examples, word for word. How do you bring up conflict in a way that's going to keep defenses down? Because again, a therapist is going to say, use a soft startup. What do I actually say? And so we have so many worksheets.
Mm, that's awesome. So why don't you share, before we close out, some of the resources you have, how they can find them, where they can find you guys. Here's the thing. They probably already follow you, but let's just let everyone know, because there's probably a few that don't.
I mean, if you Google Marriage 365, we're all over social media, our website, marriage365.com. That's usually where you can kind of explore a little bit of the resources we've created over the years, whether that's our mobile app, which gives you access to all of our video content library. We do marriage intensives, coaching.
And I also have
a men's group because I was inspired, Aaron, by what you are doing for men as well. So.
And then, of course, if you want to get The Marriage Habit, it comes out February 3rd, 2026. You can go to marriage365books.com.
Awesome. We'll put links to all this stuff in the show notes. Casey, Megan, love you guys. Thank you so much for encouraging marriages and continuing on. There's so many that aren't doing it anymore, and you guys are still doing it. Let's keep encouraging marriages. God bless you guys.